Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage. I'm Chad Haas from the UI Toolkit team.
I'm Tor Norby from the Android Tools team.
I'm Romain Guy from the team that still does not have a name.
And I'm Dushan Leska, Engineering Manager on Daydream.
Oh, welcome. Daydream. I've heard of that.
Daydream is, it used to be our screensaver until the VR team thought that that was a really cool product.
Yeah, it's really confusing when you're Googling for things.
Apparently, there aren't enough words in the English language, so now Daydream means VR.
But I think it does right or wrong. Usually, the names we use on the Android team are not particularly inspiring, so our browser used to be called Browser. Our framework is called Framework. And that was weird that our screensavers had this fancy name, Daydream. So at least now they're called screensavers. So thank you for fixing that for us.
So you work on, Daydream at first meant VR. So you work on VR.
Daydream really means immersive computing. So it's not just VR. It was from the beginning, it was the Tango project, augmented reality and virtual reality.
Okay.
And so the exact focus at any one time on what we're working on shifts as we need to. Right now, we're working really hard on something called AR Core, which is an Android platform for doing augmented reality.
What is augmented reality?
Romain?
It's when you've had too much to drink.
That's true.
you've seen a lot of demos recently. Basically, you use the camera on the device to, you know, record your environment. And from the motion of the device and the stream of pictures, we can infer the position and the geometry of the world. And then that lets the software be able to place virtual objects in the picture. So, there's a lot of apps out there. There's a lot of interesting shopping apps. For instance, IKEA has an app where you can just film your living room, and then you can place, you know, that IKEA table that maybe you want to buy, and you can see it in 3D in your living room and gives you an idea of the scale of the object and what it would look like in your scene. And it's useful for a number of other things, labeling, for instance, you know, adding extra information in the world. It's kind of like a heads-up display.
So it's a heads-up display, but it doesn't have to only be that. So I don't have to wear a helmet for this?
No, you don't have to wear a helmet.
Not yet.
Not yet.
It depends on how motion sick you get.
It could be, but the idea is to add virtual elements to your reality, to a camera stream.
Yeah,
so it could be a helmet, it could be a glasses. Right now it's on your phone.
All right, right. The difference between VR and AR is that there's no reality in VR?
It's a continuous scale of how much synthetic reality we use to trick your senses, right? So we start with just adding maybe like your sofa in your living room. And then you can go in all the way into kind of replacing everything that you see, every single pixel, every photon that hits your retina.
So a paint brand could, for example, show me my room with the paint applied.
Exactly.
Okay.
And there are some interesting experiments available already. Some apps use something called portals. It's pretty cool to see, for instance, someone is, you know, using AR on the street, and in the middle of the street, there's this virtual door, and through the door, you see like an alien planet. And as you walk, you know, on the street, and you go through the virtual portal, suddenly your phone is not showing your reality at all anymore. It's showing you that virtual world. And you turn around and you see the street back through the portal.
This would work better with a helmet, I assume, because I think if I'm walking and staring at my phone screen, I'm not really going to be fooled.
Yes. You're not fooled, but, you know, it gives you like, it's a glimpse of the possible potential in the future if we had, you know, wearables that were...
Actually, that just glasses. Sounds like a day walking into San Francisco from inside.
So. Instead of a foreign planet, I really would like history overlays. I would love to be able to sort of see cityscapes, right? The way they looked 100 years ago, 200, 300, and so forth.
Yeah. Well, we're not quite there yet.
We need a time machine to go back and record a high-definition video of London 1852.
We can recreate a lot of this. I've seen actually some prototypes of like being able to look at a ruin and just seeing what it looked like back in the day. So I think that's definitely one of the education and exploration art.
So that's where you take cases. You take old photographs and then you do what, inference to figure out the 3D structure again, and then...
Or just ask artists to build it for you.
Okay, all right.
You just pointed at a Starbucks and say, what did this Starbucks used to be? I think that's...
It's probably another Starbucks.
The future of architecture. So when you were talking about the mapping it onto the world, it seems like Project Tango, I didn't look too deeply into, but some of the demos I'd seen was about mapping the world, right? It's doing edge detection and figuring out the transform matrices. And that was about all I saw from that project. So maybe Tango is about figuring out what the 3D geometry is in the world. And then VR was at the extreme of like totally immersive environment. And then AR is this thing in between where you map the world and then you put things in it.
So Tango is the technology. We changed the branding now to AR Core. But it was the technology that allows you to locate the device in 3D space, right? By looking at the features in 3D and analyzing where you are. And that is kind of a core ingredient in creating augmented reality. Because in virtual reality, you just generate all of the synthetic sort of content, and it doesn't necessarily need to locate you perfectly in the world. You still need the sixth of tracking of your head so that you can fool your senses as you move your head, the world responds. But with augmented reality, we need to perfectly align it with the real world. As the content that appears in the virtual content needs to move perfectly in sync as you move the camera. And so that's the technology. The Tango technology provides this.
Okay.
And Tango, there were several Tango phones that were released. Tango, for a while at least, was associated with those extra sensors that were in the phones. But that's not what we're talking about here, right?
The extra sensors allow you to do this much more precisely. But now with AR Core, we're doing it purely with just the camera feed that you get from the RGB camera.
It's the camera feed and the gyro.
The gyro, exactly. So it's like a... synthesizes all the inputs to generate the sixth DOF position in space. And it would be nice to get a depth camera because that allows you to get actually the distance of each individual pixel on the screen. But there are practical considerations in terms of like your phone form factor, the power usage of having like an active depth camera that make it a little bit kind of harder to justify. So we're working with what actually consumers use right now. So like your Pixel phones are not capable of positioning in space just by using the RGB camera.
Yeah, it sounds like it requires a lot of very smart algorithms to be able to do that.
And running really fast.
And then the other piece I was wondering was the Pokemon Go stuff that came out. Does that relate to this? Wasn't that like the placing of these, it's, you know, different use case, but the placing of these objects inside the real world, which was based on technology. There was this other immersive, like worldwide game called
Ingress,
right? So it was based on that platform or approach, I guess.
So AR Core is a library that, you know, we as Google provide to do this kind of detection. But AR has been around for a long time. Actually, remember the first phone that we released, the T-Mobile G1, we had a gyro and we had a camera, and there were some AR applications back then. So it was not nearly as good as what we have today, but you know, the tech has been around.
Well, I vaguely remember someone building or talking about building a texting app that also turns on the camera and puts the camera feed behind the text so that as you're walking in traffic reading your text, you would also see the thing you're about to walk
into. Actually, before Android 1.0, I wrote a wallpaper that was doing that. Because, you know, so that you can use your phone while you're walking around.
And you still see what you're bumping
into. Well, the problem was the battery usage was pretty bad.
I think the early Pokemon game did not have the clever algorithms that allow you to correctly place the phone in space. So you could see like the 3D graphics was drifting relative to the world. Yeah. So it wasn't quite as convincing. And I think that with AR Core, we'll be able to build something much more compelling actually with this space.
So it's about improving the technology and also, as you said, sort of encapsulating it in a library to give people the easier ways to use this functionality.
So what does AR Core provide exactly? Because, you know, we're talking about recognizing the geometry of the world and replacing a whole city, but AR Core is not quite there yet, right? There are limitations to what it can do.
Yeah, is AR Core?
So AR Core is an Android library that allows you to essentially get the camera stream and a position in space for your camera. So then you can render your... virtual scene on top of the camera feed that you're getting using the camera position and also something called anchors. It's a concept that allows you to track a position in space and kind of adjust for drift as we kind of as the phone moves around in space and gets more visual information so that you can essentially place those virtual objects and render them in the correct location to appear as if they were mixed with the real world.
Are you also doing the thing Tango did where you infer the 3D structure of what we're looking at?
Not yet.
Okay.
It detects planes. Horizontal planes.
This is where the lack of the you know, power hungry but awesome depth sensor leaves a little bit kind of for future versions.
Right.
Where Yeah, exactly. So right now, with you essentially like detect interesting sort of features in visual features, right? So we can track where the different points are in space. Like if you you have an interesting carpet here, maybe so the phone will detect edges. And as you move in space, it can figure out where it is in like in the distance from the phone. And this is kind of limited to only kind of a cloud of points rather than for every single pixel in the space. We can start to infer what the geometry is, but obviously that takes a lot of compute power. The planes are kind of the easiest thing to detect, right? So when you have a bunch of features that are all lying roughly on the same plane, you can say, okay, there's some sort of surface there. And we can, as the phone moves around, we can detect the edges of that boundary. And that allows you to place things, you know, furniture on that plane or whatever.
I see. And then I can look at the camera feed to figure out things like relative color changes. Because what I'm thinking is that in AR, you have this real feed, and then you have graphics dropped on top. And there's this problem with computer graphics that often it looks too good, yeah. Right? I know when Toy Story came out, one of the big advances was that Toy Story, they actually inserted smudges and scratches because usually ray tracing just looked too perfect, right? And I'm thinking here, if I were to drop in a 3D model into my real scene, it's not going to look right. So, right? I want to apply lighting and shading.
That's great. Yeah, that's a very good point. So there's one thing that ARCore does provide. It tries to do an estimation of the light in the scene. So you get a brightness factor for the scene. And you can apply that to your 3D rendering. Obviously, things like where the lights are, how you draw your shadows, you know, it would still be kind of wrong.
That's true. But at least
you
if
don't
I
get any indication of, you know, some.
You don't know where light is coming from. You have an indication of intensity.
But at least you could figure it out. If going back to the point about the plane, if I can sample the color at several different places in the plane, I could probably make a guess. If I believe this thing is a uniform.
Well, actually, there's something even easier you can do. ARCore doesn't provide that information yet, but it's based on the camera stream, and the camera has white balance. So if we had access to the white balance setting of the camera at the time of, you know, capture, it gives you an idea of how you should color your 3D objects to make them look more part of the scene. And the thing is, you know, there's a lot of Dushan, you have a background in video games, and, you know, there's a lot of visual tricks that can be used in AR that are used in video games. Like the overall indoor lighting, you can see it right now if you look at your feet. The lights are not that powerful, and there's many lights, so the shadows are very diffuse and, you know, not very obvious. So in AR, you can fake the shadows a lot.
Throw some shadows on there? And
throw some shadows if the direction is wrong or if they're not perfect. Like, it will be good enough. It anchors the objects enough in the world that, you know, for our brains, that's more than enough. We should do better. Yeah, graphics is bad. If it looks good, then if it looks correct, then it is correct. Mm-hmm.
And there's definitely some interesting research going on right now on the team. We had a little bit easier job with the Tango hardware, which had really wide angle RGB cameras. So that gave us like information about light coming in from like everywhere. There was a really interesting experiment that used that sort of color texture to essentially light the scene. So it's called image-based lighting. I think we can use that in narrower angle camera feeds too, by just like building that image map as the phone moves around in space. It takes a lot of processing to get right, but
And image-based lighting is a technique that's widely used in visual effects in movies or even in modern games. You basically have a photosphere, but it has HDR information, so it's the values are not from 0 to 1; they are from 0 to a lot. And you know, with a few algorithms, you can infer what the lighting actually was and apply that to your objects. It makes a huge difference in quality. But again, like for indoor, you can assume that, you know, if your users, like if you're IKEA, your users are probably going to be indoor, so you can have a light setup that will work in most indoor locations and will be good enough.
Okay, so we just need more light sources in our reality, and then this will be yes. fixed.
Or more light sources in the reality, or maybe just one. If we could just cut down and only allow one light source, always from the top, always infinite.
Right. Top left.
But, you know, and it leads to an interesting problem with AR so far. What Dushan was saying, like, you know, trying to detect that point cloud from the environment, that means the camera is on, the gyro is on, the accelerometers are on, the screen is on, partly all the CPUs are on, the GPU is on to do the rendering. I mean, it's very expensive, and anything else that we might want to do to improve the rendering or to detect more from the world, I mean, it's gonna, you know, it's a very interesting technical challenge.
It means you don't have to write a lot of content for your game because you can't play it very long.
we'll make it run long.
So I was wondering actually about the some of the math involved. Like, not only do you need to detect where the major planes are so that you can anchor the characters correctly or the information in your 3D world, but you also need the right transforms, right? And that depends, like every camera has got a different field of view, I would assume. Like you said, there was a wide angle on the Tango phones and there's narrower on a typical camera. I assume it's not a standard.
It's even more complicated than that. Yeah. It's also what is the position of the camera sensor relative to the gyro.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. And that is a big part of the effort to scale AR to hundreds of millions of devices because, right. Yeah, like you said, each phone is different and not even like a whole model of phones, but individual phones have slightly different tolerances, right?
Sure.
And so for the best tracking, we actually do factory calibration where each phone is perfectly sort of aligned and a little bit of information is stored that tells it exactly kind of how to offset for any imperfections in manufacturing.
So AR management stands for artisanal reality.
Exactly.
Each hand selected. But then how do you propagate that information to the model? That was the part I was curious about because you detect that information from the world to figure out, you know, where is this camera in the world? But then how does the developer of the content displayed in that world so that their pieces of information, their 3D models are actually anchored correctly. So as you move the phone around, they're actually in the right place in that world because they're using the same world transform. Right?
The APIs make it really easy. So you don't really have to worry about any of the you know, differences in hardware.
Okay. You just define things in world coordinates and the AR system is responsible for.
Let's actually deep dive on that. If you're a developer,
I was trying.
Well, I feel like we jumped into the middle. Let's start on the beach.
Uh-huh. All right.
What do I do if I want to try to build an app? Let's say I want to overlay a bunch of wasps into reality.
Okay. Right? Good to wasps.
That's not a good thing to do. But go on.
and I also want the audio, so we'll talk about that afterwards. What do I do? I start Android Studio, and then.
can we come back to Android Studio and start with Unity,
podcast.
Perhaps?
Okay, all right.
So yeah, I don't know if you're familiar
is about the tool.
With a game engine called Unity 3D. Mm-hmm. We'll get back to Android, I promise. But right now, this is the most straightforward way to start developing AR because it offers a comprehensive tool set for doing 3D graphics. And we have a Unity SDK that basically surfaces all of the AR core APIs in a really easy to use way. And so essentially you just develop as if any other Unity 3D application, you can stick your bee model or perhaps a beehive that will spawn bees. And from the API, you will get planes. You can raycast against it. So if a user taps on the screen, you can get a position in space where they tapped. You could perhaps spawn a beehive model in that space in a position. You add the anchor component to it, which will fix it in space as the phone recalculates the position.
So you're basically telling AR core, I want to track that point.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And so you started from usually the features, the planes that are detected is kind of a thing that you start calculating positions from because world space coordinates don't really make sense for the device. I believe it starts at 000 when it starts tracking, but there's a lot of sort of drift correction and so on. So a single like XYZ position in space is kind of not a very meaningful concept. You really need to use the Anchor API to fix things in space.
Okay.
Yeah, and with the Anchor, effectively, every frame, every time you draw, AR Core gives you a new transform for that Anchor. So things are always moving. It's not like a regular 3D world where you just move your camera. On every frame, you have to retransform all the objects because there's drift correction and that kind of stuff.
And so now coming to Android. So Android is, if you're developing 3D applications, you would usually use a big engine like Unity or Unreal. Or if you're a really big AAA developer, you might have your own. But it's not a problem that has a good solution right now. The samples that we provide with AR Core give you OpenGL, which is fairly low level sort of API that it provides all of the basics for being able to track the features and draw basic geometry in space. But this is a space that we're kind of we're working on right now to make this a lot better developer story.
Okay, so what is the API surface of it then? Like, what are the things that you query for? What are the things that you actually set?
Can we bring up a documentation?
I don't remember all the exact details, but the Arcore API surface is actually pretty small.
Yeah. So
there's an AR session. You open a session, kind of like a camera session to start the tracking and all that stuff. You can ask for the session, like what the planes are, like the planes it has detected. So, and for each plane, you know its type. So currently it's horizontal planes only. You can do this heat testing. You can say, oh, is this point on screen, you know, intersecting with the plane? You can create anchors, and anchors will give you a position, a transform, not a position, a transform, an orientation. It's a quaternion.
Can you, I don't think I understood fully the plane detection. Let's say I'm out in nature, in the forest, and so there are no flat surfaces. Is plane detection simply you're detecting what is the horizon and what is the, you know, perpendicular to that? So you're going to give me XYZ as the planes? Or by plane detection, did you mean if I'm in a room, I'll identify the walls and the table and so forth?
Yeah, in this room, the planes could detect it could be the ground or that little table over there.
I see. So if I, okay. So if I'm in a place that has no planes, basically, then it's not going to detect anything.
Yeah, reconstructing a full mesh of the environment, that's still something to be done, hopefully in the near future. And also planes, by the way, I didn't mention this, but they're right now in AI Core, they're limited to just detecting horizontal planes because that constraint that it's facing up makes it a little bit easier to kind of grab that whole cloud of points and realize that they're all on that horizontal plane.
So indoor and roads and things, like parking lots.
Your desk, your floor, and so on, which is great to start putting things, virtual objects in the world. And we're going to soon have hopefully vertical planes, so you can start hanging pictures, virtual pictures on the wall.
Cool.
And that's basically, you know, the API. You have the planes, you have the anchors, you get transforms. And that's most of what you need.
And then it's up to you to, in your OpenGL session, go and paint 3D objects and decide how to, based on the information, the geometry I got.
One thing where AR Core helps for the planes, AR Core gives you a set of vertices. It gives you a geometry for that plane because it tries to detect not only where the plane is, but it's not an infinite plane. It tries to find the boundaries of that plane. But on every frame, the geometry can change as it gets refined or as information is gathered or lost. So it's a little weird, again, compared to typical 3D worlds where, you know, you have your assets and they're fairly static, or at least they don't change that much. But here on every frame, you might be recomputing the geometry over and over again.
So I remember in Lollipop, you know, when we worked so hard on making things less janky, there was a lot of talk about, you know, how many milliseconds you had to do your work before the next frame refresh. Right. And so I don't remember how many milliseconds you have to do your work, but I assume
16.6.
Yeah. And I'm assuming here, especially if people are using, Daydream devices on their head with AR or anything kind of head tracking thing, you really cannot afford to drop frames or people are going to get nauseous.
Right.
So
a headset in VR, the minimum is basically 90 frames per second.
90. Yeah, all right. 90. So
and
budget do I have to do my 3D calculations on top of what AR Core has done?
So for AR, what actually happens is you run a little late. So AR Core gathers, you know, frames and do its computation. And then when it's time for you to render, you're not actually rendering on top of the latest camera frame. You're rendering, you know, three frames ago. So that way, so you have a bit of latency, but at least, you know,
I see.
you get more time.
It's painting frequently, but it might be laggy. So I might feel a bit drunk moving my head around in this.
Right now you don't put it on your head, but it's on your phone. But it's not very detectable because there are other things that can affect the perceived latency of the camera. You know, dimly lit environments mean the camera needs to have a longer shutter speed, so that will slow things down anyway. So for indoor, like it's the tracking feels really, really good, you know, on a phone.
We have a lot more tolerance for latency when it's on a device. When you strap it to your face, you start getting motion sick real quick. And I think this is kind of a different set of challenges that we have to figure out for VR versus AR. With VR, it was all about minimizing the latency.
Yeah.
And there's some really clever work that went into reprojecting each frame so that we could decouple when an application delivers a rendered frame from how the display is updated, so that we can maintain a constant. On the phones, it's 60. On the standalone devices, it's going to be higher. I believe it's 75, but maybe 90.
Okay. 75 or 90 are common.
They even took it out of double buffered mode to decrease the latency.
Right, right. They do front buffer rendering. They do late latching. So late latching, you know, it's a technique where you try to sample the position of the head as deep as possible in your rendering pipeline, so that you can do the transform at the very last second. Because right. even if you take 16 milliseconds to do your rendering, but the distortion that you do that Dushan is mentioning is one of the last things that happen. So if you can fetch the position of the head, like, you know, after 15 milliseconds within the frame render, then you can improve the perceived latency.
Sounds like some of the jank stuff that we did for input, like grab it as late as possible.
Right, so but it's even worse than that. Imagine that for input. So what you did, for instance, was, you know, we grabbed input just before we start dispatching them to the views. Here we would be in one of the leaf nodes of the view hierarchy, and in the draw method of that view, we say, okay, what is my input right now? And that's where you start doing the work.
Yeah.
Which, of course, you know, breaks a lot of, like, in terms of architecture, it's really weird because suddenly your renderer is talking to, you know, something that has nothing to do with rendering. But anyway, so yeah, that's the VR. And for AR, something that matters more on phones is the synchronization between the camera stream and your objects. And I was actually shocked. I thought that, you know, we would have quite a bit of flexibility when it comes to how well we have to synchronize both. And then Dushan showed me an example, and just having one frame of difference in the position of an object versus
completely
what you see.
It,
yeah, completely breaks the effect.
Yeah, because it's going to be like, oh, it's superimposed.
Right, but I was expecting, like, you know, 60 frames per second, like, perceived through the natural latency of your eyes and the display and all that stuff, like, it wouldn't matter that much. But actually, yeah, it makes a world of difference in the perceived quality of your AR experience.
Yeah, and so one of the challenges is also what Roman was talking about in terms of getting the most out of the device. You want to parallelize things and pipeline things as much as possible. It's a lot harder to keep this stuff in sync when you know, you're doing your AR core update on one thread and maybe rendering on another thread. So right now, for example, the Unity integration, I believe, is locked to single threaded rendering, which loses some of that pipelining. So there are some interesting challenges ahead still.
Yeah, and what makes this even harder is so there are different ways that you can render objects in 3D, and over the past few years, like, the new technique that's all the rage is called physically based rendering, where you try to have more photorealistic rendering, and we've seen that in recent games on PlayStation 4 or Xbox One, but it's more expensive, and it's basically probably what you would want to use in your AR experience if you're going to render, you know, real objects like a car or a piece of furniture. But by definition, you're going to take more time to render, so it makes your job that much harder. There are a lot of AR experiences. We've seen that with AR stickers, for instance, where they have a more cartoony look, even though underneath it's an actual physically based renderer. But AR sticker is a great example of an AR experience using AR core.
Can you explain what AR stickers are?
So AR stickers are part, if you have a Pixel 2, you can use it. It's part of the camera. So when you swipe from the left, when you choose the camera mode, you know, we have the portrait mode and photosphere. There's a new one called AR sticker. So AR sticker is exactly what we mentioned. You know, you see, you have your camera viewfinder, so you see your world. When it detects a plane, you can drag an object from a palette onto that plane. And so the objects are characters, animated characters. So we have Star Wars characters, characters from Stranger Things, the TV show, and a few other cartoonish characters. And then because you're in the camera app, you can either record a video or take a photo. So, you know, it makes for fun. Like, my kids love, you know, taking pictures with BB-8 or an X-Wing, that kind of stuff. And that's actually another kind of experience I like with AR. I've seen a lot of prototypes and experiments of that where you can use suddenly your phone as a way to direct a movie, where you can walk around your stage, whatever that stage is, position your 3D objects, and then you start recording. So you're doing, like, your visual effects in real time. Like, I saw someone recreate some kind of the bullet time effect from The Matrix, where it just positions the bullets in space, and then he records himself, like, you know, moving around the bullets.
You mean like stop motion? As in...
Not stop motion, but because you can place the 3D objects in the world.
Okay, so the bullets weren't actually moving.
Or they could be moving, they could be animated, but you do it in real... Like, you film everything in real time, like, you're doing both at the same time. Now, the problem is that whoever you're filming is not seeing what you're seeing.
But at least the director gets to see.
Yeah, at least the director gets to see what's going on.
Right.
I remember some article talking about Avatar. There was something similar where he had he had the software set up so that he could walk around and see what they were seeing in the 3D world while the actors were in the studio.
Right, and it's more common. I mean, it's some form of AR I've seen recently. I think it was Unity who said that in movies like the new Blade Runner, Unity was used on set to do real-time pre-visualization of, because, you know, they're in front of a green screen, to give an idea of the mood or what's going to happen. Or at least the crew can see on the monitor, like, you know, toned down versions of all the effects.
Couldn't they just say this scene is going to be dark and melancholy? they could hard code that onto the walls.
Yeah, but you can add real time rendering to that. Why wouldn't you? So back to AR Core. So to be clear, what AR Core, because Dushan, you were mentioning Unity. So AR Core only takes care of the tracking. It doesn't do any rendering. It's not a rendering engine.
Right.
So if you use AR Core, it's up to you to somehow render those things in the world. And currently on Android, we have AR Core is integrated into Unity and Unreal. And you can use any 3D engine of your choice. Or if you feel brave, you can use OpenGL or Vulkan. But, you know, so that our listeners, so we set the expectations right. Like, going, if you've never done 3D before, you'll have to learn a lot of things. Going from 2D to 3D is
it's just fun things.
Just plus a Z. Just add a Z factor to everything.
Yeah, just an extra axis. Okay. it's not just with OpenGL, it's not necessarily trivial.
People spend their whole lives learning how to do this, right? I think Rama is an example of a rendering expert, and there's a lot of functionality that you get out of the box with game engines that is quite weighs a lot of bytes, right? It's like if you would add this to your existing app, one of the things that we really encourage developers to do is to add augmented reality functionality to their existing apps.
Instead of creating a special app for...
Yeah, and you know, that's kind of how we can start exploring how you make immersive computing, how you can add sort of computer interfaces into the real world.
Do you have some examples for developers of the kinds of things they may want to think about for their own apps? I mean, we already mentioned shopping, question. Right? Being able to sort of visualize this potential.
Shopping is a big one. It's kind of an obvious one. And there are, I've seen prototypes out there, like I think Airbnb, for instance, you know, showing you things mm-hmm. inside. Like you show up at an apartment and AR could show you the way inside the house, like where things are.
Yeah, or how to locate the right apartment. You know, getting
right.
To the right.
I think it's Trava. It's one of those apps that tracks your when you go running or biking. They have an AR app where they show you the terrain, like you have a 3D model like on your table, and they overlay like the path that you took, and so you can take a closer look at what you've done.
Well, I read an interesting article a while back about Homeland Security and how they basically prevent boredom from the security screeners by using computer graphics to insert weapons into suitcases. Because otherwise, if you're spending 8 hours a day or more just looking at no results, over time you become blind to it, right? But by inserting these things periodically, you know, A, it's more interesting, and B, you can actually pay attention and find out if someone isn't paying attention and, hey, you missed this, right? So it's good for many purposes. So maybe that's another thing you could do. You could insert threats into the environment.
Drivers, perhaps.
I never thought about that, Tor, no. But between wasps and your...
Well, I was thinking Strava, okay. Right? Like, you're going running, but what if there were snakes on the path that you had to jump over?
So how are you doing these days?
some other interesting use cases. I love your snake idea, but we can also do navigation.
Crocodiles,
right?
Yeah.
One of the things that I was thinking about is every time something that you see in the world... triggers you a need to pull out a phone and look it up, right? Like whether it's a, you know, you see a restaurant, say, oh, what's the Yelp rating or Google rating, in fact, and so on. If that step is bypassed, if you look at something and you instantly get that information that you would need to pull from a computer, from the network, instantly displayed where you need it. If you see someone that you haven't seen for a few years, perhaps if it tells you what their name is, how many kids they have, and so on, so you can have a meaningful conversation, no, that sort of thing.
The only useful use case is you're at a restaurant, you look at the dessert menu, and it can show you what it looks like in your plate, so you know whether you should order it.
Inside your stomach. So what I'm hearing from you is if we could integrate our devices with the real world better, then there would be no need to ever put away our devices.
That is, yeah. I think that would be lovely, right?
Driving engagement.
What a perfect world. Okay.
Or, there's definitely dystopian versions of this. So we're doing our best that it's not just going to be filled with things that you don't really want to look at.
So, actually, is success for the project defined by appearing on a Black Mirror episode? Then, maybe.
At least we can put the phone away.
I have another app idea.
Uh oh.
No, because
so we're all out of time.
Well, the other day, you know, I had to jump a car. Right. And I wasn't sure exactly where to place the jumper cable because it wasn't my model.
Oh, that's what you meant. I pictured like an action figure like jumping over the hood.
I thought you were slang for stealing a car or...
You know, figuring out where to put these things. Okay. Where is the save point in the engine block?
Yep.
And you
yep.
have to... Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. And then you pull out the car manual and they have some schematic that doesn't match.
Right. And you know. With the background knowledge that if I do this wrong, someone will die.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's true of so many things. Like once a year, I have to clean my water heater, and every year I forget how to do it. And every year I learn again, and I'm like, okay, now I know. I will remember next year. I don't have to write it down. A year later, it's like, crap, I forgot.
Augmented reality manuals, but also remote experts being able to see what you're seeing and perhaps even like markup in virtual world.
Yeah, the markup is important part. Otherwise, it's just video sharing, which we've had.
Exactly.
But being able to see it goes there as I'm moving around, that would be...
So, you know, my killer app idea was, what if you could play solitaire on a real table, right? I could use my phone in front of my desk and play solitaire. So
you want to see that glass of whiskey behind the cards.
It's funny because just yesterday at lunch, someone was talking about playing Dungeons and Dragons and how boring it was, and because you have to remember all those rules and it's too hard. And suddenly, you know, it was a bunch of engineers having lunch. So suddenly the conversation turned into, what if you could use your phone and with augmented reality, you know, your phone could show you on the table like the rules and everything. So, but that doesn't, why not play a video game at that point?
One of our goals actually is not to, and so we're doing a lot of explorations and some of the ideas you guys mentioned are great, but it's, we want to give developers tools and have the technology reach as big an audience as we can so that people can start experimenting with and exploring this space, because I feel like it's a completely unexplored area and we don't yet know how we're going to interact with these devices in the future. And so if we give them the tools now and they can start playing with it using Android devices, I feel like this is a really good thing for us to be doing now.
But you know, there are no horizontal planes inside my engine, so you're going to have to work on that plane detection to help them write these.
But augmented reality doesn't necessarily have to be about, you know, detecting geometry. An example to me that comes to mind is Google Translate, where they have this mode where, you know, on the camera stream, they replace text with the translation. Mm-hmm. And that's a form of augmented reality. And that doesn't have to go through things like AR Core. Like AR Core is a way and the most advanced way of doing augmented reality. But
and we can also track other things in space. The easiest thing that already works right now is you can stick a QR code somewhere, and those things are pretty easy to localize. There's work going on sort of image-based localization, so giving some sort of reference image you can detect it. So it could be like a picture of the engine, and as you point the phone at it, it'll know exactly where the different parts of the engine are from that reference photo, perhaps.
Okay. So I feel like if they're currently doing plane detection, surely car detection isn't that hard.
Always the pun master.
It's way too early for this shit.
It's never too early.
That's a good one.
That's it for me. I'm done.
Yeah, I don't think we can follow that up.
You killed the movie.
Anything you regret not having said about the current state of AR Core?
Well, it's still a preview, right? It's not not a final version. So
it's just the beginning.
Okay, that's important to know.
Yeah,
preview come out?
September, October.
Okay,
I think it was closer to like December. We are on a developer preview too.
Okay.
And we're trying to get the one official 1.0 release as soon as possible. It's all very, very new. Repackaging from the old sort of Tango library, which required custom hardware, to this much more mainstream Pixel and S8 and whatever other devices we support. This kind of opens it up to hundreds of millions of devices. And
what's the Minesecae version? How far back do you go?
Roman, do you remember? It's 20.
I think it's 24.
24.
I'm not sure.
We do have 26 right now, I think. I don't think that's been
right now. It's less about the API level. It's more about the supported devices. So Pixel 2.
Right. So by having it high, you basically are excluding a lot of the old.
Because right now, you know, there are, so Duchen was saying that there's the problem of the tolerance between the gyros and, sure. and the camera. So we need to know enough about the devices. They need to be, you know, high quality. We need also a certain amount of horsepower to run everything.
So the Minisig version is a proxy for, this is a recent powerful phone?
Or? I think there's also a filter on the devices, but I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, the Minisig is not the main issue.
Right? Okay. That makes it nice though, right? So we can only target like fairly modern phones with, we do need really beefy GPUs. So that helps a lot with, obviously we want to get as many phones able to run AR Core, and I think the team is going to continue to kind of scale this up as much as possible. There are techniques in terms of giving manufacturers tools to be able to calibrate things themselves. You can do sort of less accurate calibration by kind of averaging a bunch of measurements from the same sort of line of phones and creating kind of average profile. And so on. So this is kind of something that we're actively driving just to get as many devices that are able to do this. But I think they're going to be fairly recent devices just because the IMU has to be a certain level of precision, the camera sort of specs need to be certain level and so on. So it's kind of forward looking and very new for sure.
Cool.
So that's go play with it.
Yeah, go play with it. One other thing I wanted to mention also, the nice thing is that the AR core processing is running on CPU. So you have the whole GPU just for yourself to render stuff with. So
yes, that's always a good thing.
I have noticed that when I turn on Daydreams, my phone seems to go into this high performance mode as well. The screen gets brighter and it's like if we turn off all kinds of background.
It actually locks the clock rates because one of the things that you need to deliver frames very consistently. So if your CPU is throttling or GPU is throttling, that's not good. So we have two different settings for like sustained performance or high performance. We don't do that for augmented reality. The requirements to render super, super fast and actually twice every frame are a little bit harder for VR. In AR, things are a little bit more slower pace. No, it's still a challenge.
Okay,
but yeah, if anybody listening is interested, like I highly recommend to take a look at AR Core because, like I said, the API is pretty small. It's very easy to learn. There's good samples that you know take care of everything. Like you don't need to know OpenGL. Like you know, you'll be able to modify the sample pretty easily to add your own objects and do something fun with it.
The sample allows you to. Out of the box, you build it, run it, you'll be able to detect plane, it will render it, visualize it for you, and you can tap to place Andes in space, and I think that's a good starting point, really.
Is there, if someone is not familiar with 3D graphics, is there some particular book you would recommend or resource for learning the basics?
People ask me that question all the time. Yeah. The last book on 3D to learn 3D graphics I read was so long ago that it's probably not relevant anymore. I can recommend a lot of books that are irrelevant. I mean, they're about graphics and 3D, but they're not terribly useful to someone who doesn't know anything about it. But, you know, online there are tons of tutorials, especially OpenGL. There's so much available. And I'm sure like any book,
I'm sure there will be books on this
right.
too.
And honestly, the most important thing to learn when it comes to 3D graphics is coordinate systems to make sure you understand what coordinates you're working with and you know which space are you right now.
If you took linear algebra in college and you thought this is completely useless and really boring and I have no idea why they're making me learn this.
This is what it was for.
This is exactly what it was for. Yes.
So you need to learn your dot products and your cross products and your matrix transforms
You know what? It's interesting because working on that kind of stuff, I relearned some of the things I was taught in school and I discovered that it could have been taught in a much clearer and easier way.
Yep.
It's a little sad.
If only they had motivated, I would have paid attention in class.
That said, I'm glad I have Matthias in my office so that he can worry about things like spherical harmonics and quaternions, and I stick with my dot product.
Yes.
Yeah, don't scare people off. You don't need spherical.
No, you don't need any of that. That's advanced.
Go from there. And then there's a question on Stack Overflow that says, "I'd like to write an AR application."
Or you can also use Unity, because Unity will handle a lot for you. I mean, it's not going to shield you entirely from the concept of 3D and understanding.
It's probably a good place to start, actually, because you're more in an authoring environment.
Right. I mean, the side effect is, instead of learning an API, you have to learn an entire tool and its own framework and API. So but same thing. It has really good tutorials, tons of examples out there.
It helps you visualize things. It's very kind of direct and tactile.
Chances are that if it doesn't render on screen, it's not the rendering engine's fault, because that's the most horrible thing when you write OpenGL code. Like, so many things can go wrong. And I've been working with Dushan, and and sometimes say, "Hey, it doesn't render." I'm like, "Okay, it could be one of those 200 things that went wrong in our pipeline. Let's take them one by one." And we've been doing that for years and years. So
what I remember from 3D programming is, you get a black screen, because your camera's not facing in the right direction.
It's one of the things.
A tool, they'll help you with that, because you'll probably clue.
But
you
it could be that, or it
or
could
your
be that
polygons are facing the wrong way.
The triangles are facing the wrong way, or your shader is wrong, or you forgot the light, or an infinite number of things. That is
why I left rendering to more visual people that could figure it out. One thing that actually important thought that I forgot to finish was the fact that Unity is a great place to start, but it adds maybe like 20 megabytes or so to your APK. So if you're trying to enhance an existing app, it's not a great solution.
Unity builds the APK, right? Is it possible to just create an activity with Unity in your app?
It is. And so Unity has, when you build, there's a checkbox that allows, hey, generate Android Studio project, and you can just grab that. And so it gives you an activity that you can embed into your app. It's not a great workflow, but it's certainly doable. I think a bigger obstacle is, if you have an app that's 20 megabytes, you're not going to double it in size to add AR feature. Maybe in a few years, but not right now.
Chances are that if you already have an app, your Pinterest or Airbnb or whoever, your Unity might not be the right solution if you want to add the feature to your existing app.
That's right.
But it's a good way to learn.
Right. Well, thanks.